If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Hey everybody, it's Dynamite Show. Paul Fontaine, Jeff Hawkins here on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel. Almost exactly at the time we're supposed to start, Tony ends his show on time, we start our show on time, and I'm talking about Dynamite. I understand Collision is going on right now, and you people might be watching it. If there's less people in the chat than usual, that's fine. Greg brings up the same thing you kind of said to me. The first bits of Collision felt more important than all Dynamite outside of the Ted Memoriam. Yeah, I heard about what happened, and I'd agree with that. I would just say that they've burned me one too many times with this Collision that it follows Dynamite that I stopped caring. So it's on the PBR. I'll watch it at some point. But Jeff, oh, and also hi to everyone on the Fight Game Media free audio feed on Thursday morning. Big news today. A lot of us woke up to find out, or heard shortly after we woke up, that Ted Turner passed away at the age of 87. So long life for Ted, although I think the last 10 years
he had dementia. Yeah. So that, you know,
that sucks. He, if you don't know, I mean, the show aired on TBS Tonight, which stands for the Turner Broadcasting System. Collision airs on TNT, which is Turner Network Television. He also started CNN. I mean, he basically started cable television, and we'll get into wrestling, but it was more than just wrestling.
Like, oh, he's amazing. And yeah, the things that he did are amazing. Now, he's an egomaniac and did a lot of dumb things too, but I mean, Turner Classic Movies is
right?
His.
Yeah, TCM.
Because he's a film preservationist and he didn't like what that was. I mean, he tried to invent his own Olympics in the Goodwill Games.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I forgot about that. Yeah, I watched those. And didn't he allow drugs in those too? Or am I remembering that wrong?
I don't remember that, but, he won America's Cup.
Yeah. As a yachter.
As a yachter, yeah. He
bagged Jane Fonda in her prime, kind of.
Not even come on. She was past her prime by the time.
Oh, come on. She's pretty hot in the 80s.
I think they married in the 90s, but anyways.
They were dating in the 80s.
He owned the Braves. He owned the Hawks at one time.
Yeah. You know what's funny? He owned the Braves for a long, long time, right? Like,
yes,
20,
yes,
30 years. I watched a baseball game today. I watched it from first pitch to last pitch. They never mentioned him once. I was shocked, actually. People are criticizing WWE for not, you know, acknowledging it on Twitter or anything. And I mean, I was surprised that they didn't acknowledge it on the baseball game I watched.
He pissed off both sides of the political aisle because, like, in the 80s, he was right wing and he tried to buy CBS. And CBS complained, he's going to wreck our news division, blah, 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 blah. And so instantly he goes, all right, I'm just going to be hard left now. And then he started doing like all the Captain Planet stuff. And you're just
and that worked out well because Jane is obviously
just a charlatan of a man at times. Managed the Braves for one game. Did you know that?
You know, I wouldn't have come up with that, but now that you mention it, I do remember hearing that. Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a personal connection with me because he's a big historical preservationist kind of person, too. He was big into Civil War history. He was the money behind Gettysburg and getting that to be a feature film, but within the Turner family, and I remember when TNT started, it was, you'd have NBA games on there occasionally when the NBA was, you know, wasn't the big product it was now, and like Marx Brothers movies right before that. But he also liked making original historical movies and stuff like that. So he like back in the 90s, like the early to mid 90s, he'd do things like Buffalo Soldiers about that regiment. He did a pretty good biopic about Teddy Roosevelt, did one about the Andersonville trial, and all of that was because of all the money he dumped into Gettysburg. Mm. And getting that as a feature film on the big screen. That was his big thing. And back in the mid-90s when I first came out to L.A. and I had unreal representation and I was, you know, cock of the walk because I was getting meetings everywhere. I wasn't really selling much, but, you know, I was getting nibbles here and there. I had a passion project that concerned Civil War history about a border ruffian by the name of William Quantrill. Now, for historical purposes, a lot of people won't know who that is. But in terms of movies, if you want to place that, like The Outlaw Josie Wales, those guys were part of Quantrill's Raiders under Bloody Bill Anderson. He was a con man who was a teacher who kind of convinced a bunch of like ne'er-do-wells that he was a colonel in the Confederate Army. And he's most famous for burning down the city of Lawrence, Kansas. Now, in his gang were a bunch of famous people who would go on to be famous in the Old West later. The James brothers.
Oh yeah, Curry Head's
familiar. All the guys in the Long Riders. If you ever saw that movie, those groups of brothers right there, the younger gang, the Dalton gang, the James brothers, they all rode with Quantrill.
Long Riders, Scott and Bill Irwin.
Yes. Well, that too. Yes. I was thinking.
More I'm assuming that's what they're based on, right?
Yes. Yeah. And also, you know, Black Bart and Ron Bass were also called the Long Riders at one time as a tag team. It was all based on that movie. But I had this project. I had started writing it in college. And Turner, I sent an outline to them through my agent because my big thing was I was going to make it like the Wild Bunch, you know, that violent. Cause that was my favorite movie at the time. And I was look, when you're in your 20s, you think you're edgy. And I was doing this hyper violent Civil War film or whatever. It's like, oh man. And I got a note back that was like, you know what? They love it. And Ted loved it. And I was like, Oh, cause he approved these things. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go buy a Beamer. Stuff. 20 minutes later, get a phone call. Yeah, we can't do the project because they were talking like feature. They're like thinking, you know, because like John Milius had done like a rewrite of Buffalo Soldiers, I think, or something like that. Of the Rough Riders of the Teddy Roosevelt film. He was on there. We'd like to make. Because he wants to bring something else to the big screen finally. It's like, cool, you know, I have a chance here. I got a nibble. I'm going, oh, yeah, Universal has a project also about Quantrill, and Ang Lee is directing it. Oh. And I went, the Joy Luck Club guy is directing my hyper-violent fantasy? What? Yeah, it's if you remember the movie Ride with the Devil, starring
with Jewel and
that's
Tobey Maguire, right?
Yes, Tobey Maguire, Skeet Ulrich, Jewel.
Yeah, I watched that movie just so I could see Jewel's tit for
it's
5 seconds.
Garbage. It sucks. Oh, yeah. I hate it. But that was Quantrill's Raiders. And I'm like,
it's like 5 minutes of Gone with the Wind stretched out over 3 hours, but interesting 5 minutes of Gone with the Wind.
Oh, it's so hyper. Like these guys are using $20 words from the 19th century, and they're just a bunch of illiterate Missouri kids. And I watched this and I cried at the movie, but it's because I hated it so much. And also because the Jeffrey Wright character, I had a character like that in my movie too.
Oh yeah, I forgot Jeffrey Wright was in that. Yeah.
Because they used to do a scam with escaped slaves. I'm just like, I was so close to having my dream project made. And this is why I will never like Ang Lee movies ever again. I just was like, damn it.
Oh, wow.
But like he did so much for historical preservation of both movies and culture. Now, sure, look, he had his downsides on that because he highly bought into the the myth of the antebellum South being, you know, oh, this Southern gentleman, all, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's why I like Gone with the Wind so much.
Right. But now you're talking about Quantrill, not Ted.
No, no, I'm talking about Ted.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Ted has a cameo in, a very prominent cameo in Gettysburg playing a Confederate general. Now, I wouldn't say he's racist. I just think he was ignorant. I was like, there's this story I heard today, like Robbie Robertson, the guy from the band, produced this, for Turner, because Turner would buy these types of things, this documentary on Native Americans. And so they're at the Universal Ballroom for the upfronts for TBS, and a bunch of Native American dancers come out and do this thing, and Ted gets up and goes, man, that was just great, can't wait for y'all to watch this. Yeah, and weren't they great, the dancers? Oh, I have to say that, because otherwise I'd get scalped. And Robbie Robertson, this is like 1993 or four. And Robbie Robertson just.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I mean, he was just, I mean, but that was him. He was brash. He was confident. He'd run at the mouth at times.
Yeah. He's got like literally the most fuck you money of anybody that probably was living at that time. So, so I don't have any personal Ted Turner stories, but I mean, I certainly, you know, obviously my whole life, like he's been
around. I mean, he's
and important. Like, so we didn't have cable television up here for the longest time. And when we finally did, I mean, the first stations we got from America were TBS and CNN.
Talk about the history of the Superstation is that it was originally like a very powerful,
like a
UHF channel is what
right, we would like on the antenna, channel. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then he came up with the idea to basically make the station available to, you know, as much of the country as possible. And people thought he was nuts.
We're going to give them Andy Griffith reruns, Braves baseball, and pro wrestling.
6:05 Eastern. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and, that, and that's, I mean, it was famous. And
you know why he did that, right? The 05?
Yes, because you would get people that would watch the show before over the time, and then they would not switch channels to watch something on another station.
Not just that, but TV Guide back in the day was the only way to do it. And that way he got his own, he got a line by himself in the TV Guide listing, so more people would watch it.
Was because you got 7 o'clock and it would say all these different things, and then 7:05, you know, whatever was airing on TBS.
And here's the dirty
7:30.
Yeah.
And then 8:05, 8 o'clock, 8:05. Yeah. Like,
and then here's the dirty secret that everybody knows, I think, is that Vince McMahon wanted to be Ted Turner so bad.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And that to the point where he always thought he was in a feud with Ted and not with Eric Bischoff. Wouldn't acknowledge Eric Bischoff until after he hired him.
To me, it's exactly why he says Beyond the Mat, we make movies. Because Ted Turner made movies, and that drove him nuts. Because he wanted to be a media mogul, just like Ted Turner.
And when he said, "Oh, I want to do some wrestling," and then he's like, "No, we don't do wrestling. We do, you know, sports entertainment."
Sports entertainment.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, like even CNN, like people, you know, if you're under the age of 40, like you've never lived in an era without cable news. But for us, like we grew up, like there was no such thing. And he created it out of thin air.
And you have to understand how much broadcast networks hated CNN when it was around at first. Because they got really, really big ratings when Desert Storm happened.
Mm-hmm. And that was right when we first got it. I remember, I literally, like, I think I took a week off work and watched Desert Storm, you know, you know, 24/7.
The lovely Cheryl Atkinson on the board. Mm-hmm. She's always been my favorite news person. And Headline News. I loved Headline News.
Yeah, me too.
Everything you want in 30 minutes, and then you're out the door, man.
It's terrible now. Docs and and see, even CNN. Like, the thing is with CNN, like, you know, now everything's so political. Like, you know, you got one's right wing, one's left wing. Yeah. And like, you can't get honest news from anybody.
And also, you know, really, like, the CNN sports department was kind of the precursor to what SportsCenter became.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they used to do like a half hour sports show
Nick Charles and Fred. I want to say Fred Wellman, but I don't think that's the name. Or Fred Hickman. Or no.
That might be before my time, because that before I got it. So I certainly heard about it.
I got cable in around 88, 89.
But they started the idea of a ticker, you know, like, yes. which is everywhere yes. now. CNN started it, you know, so ESPN has it. Anybody with news, crawl, where, you know, and so if you wanted the news, you switch over to CNN and, you know, whatever the big news is, you're going to hear about it within 5 minutes. And, you know, whether or not they're actually talking about it. So
20 after the hour, headline sports, always a thing with me because I want to catch some highlights.
And then in terms of wrestling, like, he kept that thing going and they talked about it. And I'll go over
He really liked wrestling. And I mean, and he even realized the mistake he had made for Black Thursday.
Yeah.
For selling to WWF and going, no, that we want our Southern style.
But then he gave Bill Watts a time slot. And then I think it was Bill Watts, right? And then he was outdrawing Vince in a worse time slot. So then that's when Vince ended up selling it back at a profit. may have financed the first WrestleMania. The money he made on
that. Well, that was Crockett. Crockett bought the 605 time slot.
Right.
And that financed
WrestleMania. So Crockett dug his own grave in a way.
Just like, a crazy rich guy with way too much money.
They finally sold it, and of course Ted wasn't technically the owner anymore because he was part of WBD and, you know, all the mergers and everything. But
AOL
and
this merger,
I only learned this like recently. So everybody knows WWF at the time bought WCW for like $3 million, $2 million something, right?
Yeah.
So did you know that part of the deal was any pay-per-view money that was still owed to WCW would go to Vince? Mm-hmm. And they still had about 90 days worth of pay-per-view money coming in, and because that's how it worked back in the day. And they got enough pay-per-view money, more than enough pay-per-view money, to cover the cost of the deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they basically got WCW for free.
And don't get me wrong, like in 92, 93, when WWF decided that they were going to go to this Monday Night Raw format.
Yeah. 92, early 93. Yeah.
Yeah. Go live. It was an experiment because they had been taping the primetime wrestlings and stuff like that. And it took balls as big as church bells, to quote Dragnet, for WCW to go, we're going to their night and we're going to face them live. And Ted was like, you go for it. How much?
To be fair, I mean, I think it was Bischoff's idea, but Ted had to sign off on
Ted had to sign off on it.
Yeah. And Ted went to Eric and said, okay, what do we have to do to compete with them? And Eric said, well, they got live TV on Monday nights. We need that too. And Ted's like, okay.
Yeah,
here you go. And they went head to head for a while. And then Nitro expanded to 2 hours. So then that forced Raw to expand to 2 hours. And weren't they going like, so WCW was starting an hour earlier and Raw was ending an hour later. So they weren't actually head to head for the full four hours, or 3 hours, but they were only head to head for 1 hour of it. Is that right?
That was it originally. But Nitro did originally was they'd play live 8 to 10 and then they'd replay it 10 to
10. Right. And then they started the overruns, which still exist, where they would run an extra 6-7 minutes to get that spillover. Yeah. Ted, you're ending at 10:05. We got to get the whatever the next show is, well, the replay. Ted Turner, tremendous legacy in pro wrestling. I have a Hall of Fame vote. I vote for him every year. He'll probably get in next year now that he's dead.
The death bump?
The death bump, yeah. He was close. Like, I think he was only at one point, I think he was 4 votes away. So, I think
he loved him. Dusty Rhodes. I know that much. Yeah. I mean,
and Flair.
Oh, that guy. And Flair. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who didn't love Flair back then?
Yeah. I don't know about Sting. I guess Sting says he loved him. So maybe he did.
That was an interesting part of the tribute. I was like, I don't know if he was that high on Sting.
I wasn't expecting it. I will say that. And I mean, we might as well get right into it because, they opened the show. I will say they were in Charleston, South Carolina. And from what I heard, now, unless they sold a ton of tickets in the last couple of days, I think this was one of the smallest Dynamite crowds in history, is what I heard, other than obviously the pandemic.
Okay.
Maybe when they ran the ECW arena. I think they did Dynamite from there. It was like, I think it was around 1,700 tickets. And at times it sounded like 500. You know, at times it, you know, at times they were making noise, but it was weird. But they started out and Tony Schiavone was in the ring and he puts over, he says, you know, we're here to pay tribute to Ted Turner. He said he was the reason pro wrestling was on national television.
Vince McMahon spitting in his grave.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said, and there's one man that knows this better than anyone else. And right away I was like, oh man, he's going to bring out Sting.
Blair?
Yeah, no. And he says, one of the faces of pro wrestling on Turner Broadcasting Systems, and it's Sting. And out comes Sting. No music, which was interesting.
Oh, I thought it was classy, though. I liked
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it was good. And he, you know, no hair dye. He's in his white hair and white beard. Fans are chanting, holy shit.
I know that it would have sent Vince on a kill crazy rampage to Stamford Towers. I would have really liked, because they own the footage. WWE should have just given some of the Turner 605 footage where Turner was actually on the station or on the wrestling. Cause he did a couple of times. He stopped by the studios a couple of times for tapings. That would have been a nice gesture, I think. But
do you think they'll do a tribute to him on SmackDown? I think they will.
I think they'll show a billionaire Ted sketch.
Well, yeah, that'll be part of the tribute.
Yeah.
And then they'll claim that Ted liked it.
Yeah, no, they'll say, oh, the progenitor of the Monday, it'll all be about the Monday Night Wars. It won't be about anything 605.
No, 1973 didn't exist. They started in 93 and they ended in 2001. There's no wrestling on the Turner Broadcasting Networks now. Nothing to see here.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be explicitly focused to, well, Ted Turner thought he could compete with the WWE in the Monday Night Wars.
And he did for a while. They had 83 weeks.
Win 83 weeks, he ultimately lost. You know, that's how it's going to be. That's
yeah.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
So fans are chanting, holy shit. Shivani says, here we are again, Sting. We both knew Ted Turner really well. He's a big part of you and I being together for all these years, 4 decades. A little time missed in there, but you know, who's counting? He said, you met with him a bunch of times. And then Sting says, can you imagine having an all-in billionaire who absolutely loved pro wrestling? It's like, yeah, Steve, I can. I was, and then he says, but I'm talking about billionaire Ted.
Oh, and he backtracked on that one, really, and then went to Big Ted real quick.
Big Ted.
Yeah.
Yes, I can't believe what he did for us. Committed to us, devoted to us in every way. When the top brass would have their meetings with other top brass, they'd try to cut pro wrestling, but Ted would look at all of them and all the wrestlers and said, keep doing what you're doing because I got deep pockets. I thought the timing of this was interesting, given some of the discussions that were going on this week. About the TV time slot and everything, which I think is all bullshit anyways, but I don't think there's anything to it. I just, you know, my radar goes up sometimes. But he said, Ted, and then he said, that's a shoot. Said, so thank you, Ted. Without you, there wouldn't be a TNT title. There wouldn't be a Sting, a Darby Allin, a Tony Schiavone. You wouldn't even be here tonight, you fans. So thanks again, Ted. Big Ted. And the fans chant, thank you, Ted. And then Tony says, tonight, your protege will defend against Turner Network Television champion Kevin Knight. And Sting says, Darby Allin and I took a blowtorch to this place for 3.5 years. Felt great every single time. It's great to be back here in South Carolina. Great to know that Darby Allin is wrestling for the world title tonight. Greatest tag team partner I've ever had. And I'm also grateful for a second billionaire who wants to keep the ball rolling. So thank you, Tony Khan. And then Schiavone says, when you see the Turner Network Television title belt that Kevin Knight has and the Turner Broadcasting Systems title that Willow Nightingale has, notice the side plates. They have a thing about I didn't write down exactly what he said.
I think it said it has a template
of the studio or something.
Template of Techwood Studios on it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was very important to Tony Khan and very important to the history of pro wrestling on TBS and TNT. Yay, billionaires, lady. So now we bring you 3 hours of wrestling in memory of the Maverick Ted Turner.
There is some bit of disconnect with the AEW fan base and billionaires, which is kind of funny, but yeah.
Well, and then the other thing is, so when he said, you know, we're bringing you 3 hours and then everyone cheers or whatever, and then Tony should have said we're going to do a 10 bell salute, but he didn't. So the fans didn't get the cue to like shut up because we're going to do 10 bells. I think it was halfway between the first and the second one they figured out.
Tony had his lines and he says, I know them. And then he forgot them. That's what happened.
Yeah. And so that was fine. They did a nice 10 bell salute. Yeah, and then it was over, and the fans chanted, thank you, Ted. Kind of light. Again, a lot of the chants tonight were light because there wasn't a lot of people there. The heat is on, said I think he says that they did get up to about 2300, so maybe not the lowest, but you know, so a lot of late ticket movement. Again, still like not as good as they've been doing the last few weeks, but you know, maybe there's people are buying tickets to see Darby defend his belt, who knows.
South Carolina tends to be a pretty good wrestling area,
yeah,
so that's kind of weird.
Yeah,
I was born in Charleston, so I'm...
although I mean, if you look at what they advertised for this show, it wasn't much. So.
No, and this felt like we're giving up to hockey for the most part.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. I saw somebody who's like a diehard AEW fan in the Discord is just saying like, "Where's all the stars tonight?" And then I mentioned, "Well, we got Moxley, we got Sting, and Darby is the world champion." And he's like, "Yeah, but MJF, Hangman, Swerve."
They're all appearing on Collision.
Yeah, I guess. But we got John Moxley and Juice Robinson. Like, I mean, that just screams Collision. I'm sorry. In a Continental Title Eliminator match. We had Renee doing sideline reporting before the thing. Crowd's chanting for Moxley, even though I'm pretty sure he's a heel. He was really weird at the beginning. Juice did a catapult spot, and Moxley, like... he sold it as unathletically as I've ever seen a catapult spot. It was very weird. I can't even really describe it, but match was okay. I was cheering for Excalibur at one point because he mentioned the puzzling situation with Will Ospreay and the Death Riders. And I'm like, yes, because I keep saying this and it was, oh, you're an idiot. You don't understand it. Blah, blah, blah. You need to pay attention. It's like, no, I, you know, last week when I didn't understand what was going on and people said, oh, you had to watch that video package on Collision. So I did watch a video package on Collision. I was no more, that didn't help. I still don't understand why Will Ospreay needs help from the Death Riders when his own team beat them. I don't understand why Marina Shafir is fixing his neck when his wife was trying to kill Marina Shafir like a month ago. I don't understand why he's just willingly going to train with these, you know, lunatics, that tried to kill his friend and his mentor, Brian Danielson. You know, like I don't understand any of it. And why would he go to them for help and not the United Empire?
Paul, you don't have to go into chat rooms during shows and stuff. You really don't.
Well, this is true. Now, I do want to ask you something, Jeff. You sent me a message on the weekend, maybe it was Monday, asking me about continuity between New Japan and AEW. And I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. You said I would by the end of this Dynamite, and I thought
you might, but apparently, I guess Andrade is now part of United Empire.
He always has been.
Has he? Okay, I didn't know that.
Oh, well, because they don't, because the answer to your question is sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. He's also on January 4th.
Okay, because he's also a member of the Don Callis family. So I'm just how are we going to rectify that? Because he's holding his time. They just did a Callis family promo, which probably should have been on Dynamite, with El Idolo holding his title. And I'm
did
like,
did Catch to have his?
No, because he had no shirt on.
Okay. So when this thing started, part of the deal was, oh, well, this is going to play into the AEW storyline with the Death Riders against the Callis family, who were feuding at the time, because Andrade joined the United Empire. So United Empire is loosely affiliated with the Callis family. And the Death Riders are loosely affiliated with the War Dogs, or, you know, in New Japan at the time. But now the War Dogs are in AEW. So it's all messed up. And here, what I thought you were going to talk about was, do you remember last week?
No.
In the promo that they did with the Death Riders and Will Ospreay, when he walks in and John says, "Are you cleared yet?" And Will says, "No." And he hangs his head. And then he says, "I have a match this weekend in Japan with my boys." And then tonight, you know, skipping ahead a bit, they referenced the match. They didn't say what the match was. They said something about a title. And apparently Will Ospreay wrestled in Japan on the weekend, even though he's not cleared to wrestle in AEW.
And they did a promo with him and Doc Samson, I believe, on the collision part.
Okay. Did Doc clear him now?
I didn't listen to the promo.
Okay. Somebody mentioned it in the chat. So if you know whether or not he's cleared now.
I'm going to say my favorite little thing about this Juice Robinson Moxley match before we move on.
I don't have much else to say about it.
It has nothing to do with the match. Renee gets out there and goes, I spoke to Juice Robinson backstage earlier, and he was just muttering to himself, "I beat John Moxley once, I can do it again." And when Juice comes out walking down to the ring, all he's doing is muttering to himself, "I beat John Moxley once, I can do it again." I loved this little just piece of continuity. It made me laugh. I loved it.
Plethoric sums it up nicely. Mox was a heel who was a coward who tapped out to Kyle O'Reilly, then a fighting babyface who loves AEW, and then a diabolical heel who tried to kill Will.
Yes.
And John says that the doctor did clear Will, then no, then somewhat. Thanks for clearing that up, John. Moving on. John Moxley won. He made him pass out with a bulldog choke, I believe. Second time, the match was fine, bordering on good. Went too long, and it's fine. I still have no idea why they were wrestling, but that's a match that happened.
Didn't he beat? No, that was Ace Austin. No. Got beat by Okada last week. That's
who. Yeah. No, there was no reason for this. I think it's
there's no reason for any of these matches for the most part, other than the main event.
No, that's Harwood and Orange Cassidy. That one had some build to it.
Okay.
The women's tag, you could say. Okada match, I literally had no idea it was happening until the two guys were in the ring. And then when it was over, I have no idea why it happened. And if I was Brian Keith, I wouldn't be answering my phone tomorrow. Is the feeling I had when that match was over.
He's an ROH staple. He's been winning.
Yeah, Tony doesn't cut anybody, so I'm sure he's fine. But if he was in WWE, I would be throwing my phone away if I was booked in that match. So next up, we got that segment. So funny story here. My wife was in the room and she's watching this. And the first two people they focus on are Daniel Garcia and Wheeler Yuta. And my wife says, "Aren't those two guys a little small to be wrestlers?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Then she sees Wheeler doing his sit-ups on Will Ospreay's neck. And she's watching this intently. And she's like, "You know, I've heard that exercise is really good for the neck, for strengthening the neck." And I'm like, "Wow, my wife is picking up on this storyline better than I am." She doesn't even watch this show. That was what was going on. So Garcia, of all people, cuts the promo to start. So he said, you had a 15-hour plane ride. You went and you won titles with your petty little friends in Japan. But it's us against the world. And if you want to be the best version of yourself, you got to work for it. So let's get it." And then they show Wheeler doing his sit-ups on Ospreay's back. And then he gets up and Ospreay's feeling his neck. John Moxley gets in his face. And my wife says, like, "Why is he screaming at him?" And I was like, "He's not screaming. He's just talking very loudly." And he says, "Have you ever heard of the concept of death ground?" And Ospreay's like, "No." And he's like, "Well, it's standing on ground. And you're foolish and you can't leave. No escape, no other options. It's do or die. And that's where you're at right now. So if we don't get your neck right, if we don't get this right, it's over. You're done." Sure, you could still have a career, get paid, hang out like the rest of the posers in this company. But that's not what you want, is it? Osprey's like, no. He says, you're not like all these people. You're different.
Yeah.
It's a privilege to be where you're at, to come all this way. Well, this is the last 1% that you need to get through. You're on death ground. It's going to be hard, but it's the only good option. Nothing else exists except what's right in front of you right now. Every second, every minute. And then Pac just comes right into the frame and pushes the cameraman away. And he says, all right, that's enough. And that was that. And I will say, this is probably the best of the segments that they've done. I still don't like this angle, but at least I didn't come away from this one confused. And if my wife could figure out what was going on here, then I guess they did a good storytelling job, is the way I looked at it. But none of it makes any sense.
It needs more development on the Osprey end. What is he getting out of this?
Well, yeah, and why? Like, that's my question. And why would he trust this guy? That's what I don't understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, you know, and people are comparing it to Rocky III, and I'm like, okay, so I missed the part of that movie where Apollo Creed was killing all of Rocky's friends and using a gang of thugs to, like, beat, you know, to win all his boxing matches. Like, no, it's, you know, like, there's turning to your rival for help. Okay. You know, I can't remember the analogy you brought up, but whatever it was, it sounded better than that.
Oh, it was Point Break.
Right. Okay. And a lot of people have made the Point Break analogy. So, it's been a while since I saw that movie. So
good.
Yeah. And then
I like being on the winning end of people.
And then Fast and Furious was another one. I think people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all Fast and Furious is Point Break with cars
and over 10 movies. You know, if
about French, it's about family, Paul.
If Point Break, Point Break had been made in the 2000s, we'd have had 10 Point Break movies by now.
We need to find a way to let the bad guys live and then join the cops, and then we'll find another bad guy who will you then live join long the
enough.
Too.
You live long enough to either die a hero or become a villain.
Jeez.
So next we got the Dax Harwood versus Orange Cassidy double jeopardy match. What's a double jeopardy match, you ask? Well, if Dax Harwood wins, he and Cash and Ciampa get a shot at the conglomeration's World Trios titles. And if Orange Cassidy wins, two members of the conglomeration get a shot at FTR's tag team titles. So the most interesting part of that will of course be Dax, Cash and Ciampa getting a shot at the Trios titles. So of course, that's not what happened.
But, okay, question. Why are all these other people down at ringside?
I don't know. And this is the first thing I wrote down. There's a million people at ringside. The Dogs, Ciampa, Cash, Stoke, the Bucks. I think the Rascals were there. The Conglomeration.
No, they weren't.
Okay.
The Conglomeration were there.
RPG Vice.
Yes.
Why were all these people there? I don't know. I guess they're all tangentially involved in various feuds surrounding these guys. The match was fine. It was a house show match. It was really a house show match. They were fucking around. Dax was doing the hand in the pants spots, and then Orange did it. They kept showing the guys at ringside, and the baby faces were cheering and the heels were trying to interfere, and they did a couple times. Finley got off a shot on Orange at one point, and then someone else, Stoke distracted the ref while Dax tried to cheat. And then, you know, you see the Bucks all laughing and clapping and Edge. And then every time they showed Christian, he just had a scowl on his face. Like he never was out of character. So eventually the Orange Cassidy hit the Stung Dog Millionaire, then a Superman punch. But Orange was selling his arm, I think, and Dax rolled out. Then Dax put on an arm bar. Orange Cassidy tried to roll out. Dax used up kicks, and then Orange Cassidy rolled him up and got the pin. And the pin kind of came out of nowhere, but, match was fine. And then after the bell rang, everyone got in the ring, started fighting with each other, and they mentioned that the conglomeration will get a tag team title shot. Didn't say which two. I'd assume it's going to be Strong and O'Reilly. And, of course, since Orange won. And then it ended up with RPG Vice in the ring by themselves with eight guys. Fans are chanting, you fucked up. Rocky's pleading for mercy. Copeland poked him in the eye. Then he hit a spear on Trent. Christian looked like he was going to hit a spear on Rocky. Instead, he just kicked him in the nuts. And that was that.
Oh, my favorite part was Rocky saying, no, who you want is Trent. You don't want me.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then he kicks him in the balls.
I just want the bell to ring on Christian and Cope versus FDR. Christian to instant quit. And then everybody just beats down Copeland.
Oh my God. If that happens, like, people are going to lose their minds. You know that match has three stipulations?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a New York
Street fight. I'm hoping for four.
York Street fight, an I Quit match. And if Christian and Cope lose, they can never team again.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone said, oh, well, that means they have to win. It's like, not really. I mean, you know, they don't have to team again. I think we all think they will. I think we figure this is heading to a three-way at All In, or perhaps a four-way.
Perhaps a four-way with possibly one Austin Creed and Kofi, whatever his last name was.
The New Dawn.
I believe Plethora brought this up, so let's talk about it now.
Oh, the pay cut thing?
No, whether or not, you know, because everybody seems kind of excited about Motor City Machine Guns and possibly the New Day coming into AEW. And
well, before I knew about the New Day, I thought
because they were in here. They were already in AEW and everybody likes them, and I have no problem with that. I just want see the problem is Tony allows a lot of creative freedom from the guys doing the creative, and there's no one to look at anybody and go, you know what, let's try something completely 180 with you guys when you come in, to prevent people doing like the New Day Rocks chant and other things like that. Let's think of a gimmick for you guys that is so off the beaten path for you two that it'll be a complete reinvention. It's not going to be a reinvention. It's going to be them doing the New Day with different names because
it's going to be the New Dawn, and it's going to be Austin Creed and Kofi.
Yes.
He that's his real first name, so he can use it.
Yes.
It'll probably just be Kofi, like it was Cody.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect the team will be Kofi and Austin Creed.
Yes.
So it almost like you're saying it's Kofi Creed, but it's not Kofi Creed.
Kind of like they did with the Rhodes.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And I want Tony to shell out some money for Nina Simone's Feeling Good. For their theme song. It's a new dawn. It's a new day.
I know what it is.
Yeah. Like, I think it'd be perfect. Okay. And it would fit their characters. And so I think that's probably what we're heading to. And then where does that leave the Motor City Machine Guns? I don't know. Maybe they go to New Japan and then they get to work, you know, and or CMLL, and then they get to come in and just do spots here and there. And
I'm going to say this: their latest stuff that was mostly just for commercial breaks for international audiences was the most interesting stuff they had done since they basically got reborn as heels.
Talking about the New Day?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to call him Austin Creed now, where he was wearing funeral garb.
And, right. You know, yeah. Over the tag team titles. Yeah.
Yes.
You realize the WWE cut, I think it was at least four and possibly five tag teams that had won the tag team titles in the last year. Motor City Machine Guns, New Day, Gacy and Loomis. Gacy and Loomis and Motor City. Or did I say Motor City Machine Guns twice?
You said Motor City Machine Guns already.
There was one other team. Can't remember who, but maybe it was only three. I don't know.
Out the Mud was...
I don't know if they had the NXT titles.
No, they didn't, but I was just thinking them as a team.
No, they're still there. It's High Rise.
The MFT, Cobb and Tangaloa.
Oh, yeah, Cobb. Yeah, and they're gone too, right?
Yes.
So technically they were the champs. I mean, they were, you know, Freebird rules, but I mean, you know, that shows, and they just had WrestleMania two nights, 13 matches, two sets of world tag team titles, and neither one of them were defended on that show. So that kind of tells you.
Does Jeff Cobb end up in AEW?
I don't know. Jeff and I, or I mean, Garrett and I talked about that last night on the Takedown, and I think it depends on whether or not he wants to.
Right.
Yeah. Tommaso left, but I don't think him and Gargano had the belts in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would be good in AEW. Like, he's different. And, you know,
he's fine. I think it's one of those things where it's like he's been in before as the mercenary for Jericho, as I recall.
Yeah, I mean, various roles. Like,
I think he's just going to go back to Japan and be in United Empire again.
Yeah, or feuding with them, one of the two, because they were baby faces when he left. So they may, you know, and Callum Newman seems to kind of want to distance himself from people that, you know, so I could see him coming in as if he's going to join, and then they turn on him, and then he joins up with Unbound Company in New Japan, like the Yotsuba group, you know, you could see. But back to the show we're covering. No, it's fine. then we got a video package for Roosh. And they just, you know, it's a good little video package. They had two of these. They had another one on Andrade too. And just, I almost got a feeling like Tony only had like maybe an hour and a half of material tonight, and you had to stretch, which sometimes makes for good. Like, cause I like packages like this, and this was a good video package. I don't really know where they're going with Roosh, but
a lot of video packages tonight though. I mean, because like a lot of the promos were pre-tapes.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Interesting. And nothing wrong with it. I'll bet you people weren't complaining.
I bet the quality control is better.
And actually, then the next thing we got, and you almost never get this on AEW. Like, I honestly can't think of any time they've ever done this. And it was only like 15 seconds, but they literally replayed the Chris Jericho segment from last week. Mm-hmm. Like, not in a video package. They literally just replayed it. Because I was like, I'm watching this, and I'm like, wait a second. This is exactly what they aired last week. The thing with Renee and where he got attacked by the demand. Then they cut to a live segment, and he's effing furious. The time for talking is done. Words are over. It's time to fight. But unlike the demand, I don't want to fight backstage. So I'm going to take it out there to the people. So he goes out there, and how are you, South Carolina? Get up. Come on. And the fans are chanting Y2J, which is like he hasn't been Y2J in about 15 years. And then he says, I'm going to keep this very simple because this is Charleston. This is AEW Dynamite. And I am Jericho. And I'm done with 3-on-1 beatdowns. And I'm done with the attacks from behind. And I'm done with all this bullshit. So Ricochet, I'm going to ask, I'm going to demand that you come out here and talk to me face to face, 1-on-1, man to man, right here, right now. Now, I don't know if this was on purpose, but he literally just said, the time for talking is done. I want to fight. And then here he says, I want you to come out here and talk to me.
Yes.
Jericho's not an idiot. I think that was on purpose, even though it sounds completely stupid. I think he's a disingenuous prick that's pretending to be a babyface. Okay.
Yes. Okay. This has been our thesis since.
Yeah. But I mean, the longer it goes, I'm wondering, or maybe the fans haven't figured it out and they think he's a babyface. So anyways, out comes Ricochet and the Gates of Agony are behind him. And Toa shoved Jericho while he was trying to get Ricochet a mic. And then he gives hands to the mic, says, Jericho, look, try to do a favor by telling you to leave, but you wouldn't listen. I'm sure that you and every simple-minded person out there in Charleston think it's funny that you trademark that stupid phrase every week that you show up. And Jericho says, I can't hear a damn word you're saying because these people are booing so loud. And they were booing pretty loud. He says, I don't know if you have a mutilation fetish, but we can make this a reality in front of these overweight, mouth-breathing hillbillies in North Carolina. He says, if I'm being honest, I'm getting tired and bored of it. But if we do this 1-on-1, what do we get out of it? What does the man get out of this, Jericho? And then Khan whispers something to him, and Ricochet likes it. He says, Jericho, 6 years ago, you created your own match, a match that that shaped Double or Nothing in a stadium that's named after an American icon, Louis Armstrong. I'm going to give you a losing record in your very own match. And then he starts arguing with someone in the fans, trying to get them to come out and fight him. He says, but Jericho, back to you. This time, I won't just beat you with your own move, the Lion Salt, which is now the Rico Salt. I want to beat you in a stadium stampede match. And then Jericho says, then he says, that's a great idea. But the only problem is last time we faced each other, you had to pay people to watch your back. I'm not sure you're going to be able to find four other partners because here in AEW, this is my company and nobody likes your ass. And then Jericho says, first of all, you stupid son of a bitch, this is South Carolina. And everybody cheers. And then Ricochet says, same thing. He's not wrong. Let me get this straight. You want a stadium match at Double or Nothing? Stadium Stampede? Well, I'll tell you this, Ricochet, you're on. And I'm sure there's somebody here that likes me. But even if I can't find four partners, I'll take on all of you by myself. Bald. Then he punches him with the mic. And then he fights off Gates of Agony by himself, hits a Judas effect on Ricochet. And he ends it, but he stuck around a little bit too long. And then he ends up getting, you know, beat up 3-on-1. Hurt Syndicate comes out and makes the save. I was positive they were going to attack Jericho and they were going
to enjoy the heel team.
Yeah, because Ricochet needs two partners too. But no, apparently he is partners with them. So now it's 3-on-3. In the next couple of weeks, will be both teams trying to find two more partners.
I think I know who's going to be on the babyface side. Possibly. I don't know.
Sammy?
I was thinking Sammy and Dustin.
Yeah, Dustin apparently is close, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Sammy is a heel right now, and he's part of LFI, but who cares?
And then on the heel side, it'll be something like, you know, the Dogs or something like that.
No. Big Bill and Brian Keith.
I'll take that. I'd love that.
Yeah, I mean, because they'd want to get their hands on Jericho, right?
Can I get Rush in here? Maybe Rush and Andrade?
Maybe Rush and Sammy on the babyface side.
Rush is not a babyface.
It doesn't matter. Yes, he is. He cuts these promos. The fans chant. They, you know, like
he's a babyface to us.
He's a babyface to those fans. They chant like you get. All right,
I am, no, I'm here for. I am here if Rush is on the babyface side. Because you have Rush, Lashley, and Benjamin. My God, who would want to fight?
And then they all attack Jericho after the match.
Sure, why great. Not?
But Sammy had the most memorable moment of the first Stadium Stampede match.
Oh, yes. So I
think it's got to be Sammy at least. And you know what? He is a heel, but nobody watches ROH, so it doesn't matter.
Okay, how about Sammy and... Oh, wait a second. How about... Okay, maybe Sammy. I was thinking Sammy and Ortiz, but it could also be like Eddie.
Or Kingston and Ortiz.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, there's definitely worse ideas than that. So they go to the back... And by the way, let me point out, my wife was gone by now, thank God. So we go to the back with Renee, Mina, and Harley. Now, Harley is dressed in a t-shirt.
Yes. And,
okay, this is a beautiful woman, okay, if you didn't know. And she was looking, just as a reminder.
Hi, Jeff. It is...
A beautiful, beautiful woman. And she was looking... trying to look as unbeautiful as possible, but it's impossible for her not to look beautiful. But she looked frumpy, or as frumpy as Harley Cameron can look. She's dressed in a t-shirt. It's a long t-shirt. Right. And she's been kind of depressed ever since her tag team with Willow broke up. And so she says she doesn't know how to feel. And then Mina cuts this promo to get her fired up. She says, wake up! Once it comes down to us and Stat, it's not good. Can you trust Stat? I hope so. But we have a match to win. And Harley, you're one of the first ever tag team champions, so stop looking out there. Look in here. And she rips off her shirt, and her bra is there, and her tits are spilling out of it. And she's like, Sheeta, Stat, the wrath is back, and tonight you're going to feel it. And Renee is flabbergasted, and she says, you're in for a hell of a match, but you got to go put something on. and they leave. And this was something else.
Boobs of Wrath.
The Boobs of Wrath. That should be their team name.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be at first.
Yeah, the Timeless Love Boobs of Wrath.
Watching Mina struggle with the English language.
Hey, you know what? I understood every word she said. So
I did too. Yep. Let's just move on.
So they did a rundown early in the show of the card. I looked at a rundown of the show before I started to do the preview for this show. Harley spent great money, her words, by the way.
Yes, yes. I remember that promo.
Yeah. So I do not recall a match being announced of Kazuchika Okada and Brian Keith. Was this a standby match? Did they say that? I don't know. Like, I'm literally asking. I don't know. Does anybody know? Or
I didn't hear Standby, but okay.
Okay, and I believe it was a title match, but I'm not sure. They did put up like international championship before the match, so it might have been a title match. It doesn't matter. This was your typical Okada match, except, you know, like a lot of times you get Okada at like 50% or charitably less than 50. This was maybe 20. He put forth no effort in this match. Brian Keith did, but they didn't get much time. And Okada, like, you know how he always does the thing where he teases the Rainmaker and then he flips off the fans and he hits. This time he just hit the Rainmaker, pinned Brian Keith, and Brian Keith was flat on his back. Like, and then he was there. I think he's lying there while they did the promo. Like, yeah, he's an ROH guy now, but man, they buried this guy something fierce.
Well, Swerve's doing his gimmick, so.
True. Yeah. The most wanted by the bounty hunter. And it was always basically just like almost a squash match. I mean, Brian Keith got some offense in, but Okada did a promo.
What? Where is Big Bill, by the way?
I don't know. I was asking that myself too. Like he wasn't at ringside. Who knows? Maybe he's hurt. Maybe he's injured, or maybe his contract's up. Like, who knows? But I like that team. And
I do too. I like their personality. I like their promos.
I think they have a new name too, and I can't remember what it is, but like they're not the Learning Tree anymore. They gave them a different name, but maybe somebody in the chat remembers their name. But Okada did a promo. He said he doesn't like the Keshta. He wants more. He's coming for the AEW world title, bitch. And I wrote, maybe that's Darby's match next week. And I guess we found out Collision that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of random out of nowhere. Another one of these, I'm sure, matches that Darby had on his list of people he wants to wrestle. And, you know, he's gone through the Pacific Northwest guys, and now he's moving on to, you know, probably
an actual upper tier feud, which is good for a champion. Now, he's not going to win it clean because Takeshi is going to do something. And
do we get how close to 100% Okada do we get in this title match next week?
More motivated than usual, but not motivated in pay-per-view terms.
60% maybe.
Let's go with 65. Let's go with the gentleman 65.
Okay. All right. We're pretty close then. Then we got the Andrade El Idolo video package. It was pretty good. Calls himself the best Mexican wrestler alive. They focused on the women that were at ringside watching the matches. This would be even better if he hadn't lost his last two matches or if they had mentioned that he won a title on the weekend. Which they didn't. Apparently you said they did on Collision, so that's fine. We know that about a third of the audience is going to tune out before Collision starts. So then we got, this promo. Kevin Knight with Speedball. Tonight, the TNT champion becomes Jet Two Belts. Time for you to prove you're a rising star, but you're way up there shining bright. And then Kevin Knight says, I like the way that sounds. I appreciate you, Darby Allin, for being a fighting champion. You said you're fighting until your body will give up. Well, tonight that's what's going to happen when you step in the ring with the Jet and I become the new AEW World Champion. This was the least convincing promo I think I may have ever heard for somebody going into a world title match.
You know when they say that's the least you could do?
They're wrong, because that was this.
I wish, give me a promo at the top of the show about what winning the title would mean for Kevin Knight.
Yeah.
Let Darby cut a promo and let's just go, man. Keep hyping it throughout the night.
Somebody should walk by and shove these to a locker.
Wow. Yeah.
That would be the debut of High Rise.
Hangman could have done it. I used to scare you guys as a team.
Well, yeah, he's their partner, isn't he? What was their name? Hung like a beast or something. What was their name?
It was terrible.
Yeah, it was something with Hung, right?
Cowboy Speed, I thought, or something.
No. It was like some sort of a sexual reference.
Jet shit.
No. Somebody will. Thank you, John. John says, I had more charisma and excitement in recapping than that promo than both Speedball and Jet did. I thought my Mike Bailey was spot on.
It was. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. And I did have more emotion than he did, unfortunately. Then we got an ops promo. As I said earlier, maybe it was on, maybe it was when we were talking before the show. I can't remember. But best thing on the show.
Yes.
And I liked the main event a lot. But Joe says he's got Bowens and Shibata with him. And I thought Hook might be filming, but no, it was somebody else. But Shibata wanted to film. And then Joe's like, no, just let the guy do his job. And he says,
he's union. You don't want to mess with those guys. Yeah.
Says, well, ladies and gentlemen, it is I, and I'm joined by the ops. Now, last week I put out an offer, and sadly, it's not being heard. So, Will Ospreay, please hear these words and allow me to explain myself in a non-intimidating manner. John Moxley is telling you how to think. Will, you think however you want to think. William, I see the momentum. I see the tide rising. You are destined for greatness. Some say you will be the next world champion. But how much of you will be left to remain champion? With men like us at your side, William, that could be a very long time. Now, you may say to yourself, what advantages are there to this? Look at Hook. He lost his chance to become the champion of television last week. I didn't punish that man. He's off filming a movie. I put him in a better position to success. Put in a few words for him with my contacts. That's what I want to do for you. Anthony Bowens. Long time, one of the most underappreciated talents in AEW. Now he's got an opportunity to succeed. Katsuyori Shibata. Nowhere else in the world can he be what he is, and that's the wrestler, than with the ops, right here, right now. Will, the choice is as clear as day. So I'll put my hand out to you one last time. But if it's not accepted, next time I'm putting out my fist. I freaking love this, and Will should join the ops. He's not good. Although, he's going to be fighting Joe at Double or Nothing is the conclusion I've come to. But that's not what I want.
I want to know who booked Hook in a movie.
Joe, he told you.
No, but I mean, like...
No, it's probably that movie he was filming before, and he probably had to go do recuts or whatever.
He was filming a movie?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't... Well, it's like a low-budget one. His girlfriend's an actress, I think. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, he was off for like 3 months, like last year at some point. He wasn't injured. He was filming a movie. So yeah. Curry had Don Callis had Ospreay. He fired him.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that promo, and I he's an idiot if he doesn't accept, and I guess he's an idiot cause he's not going to accept.
Makes everything so real. I love it.
Joe is a reasonable person who backs up his words. Moxley is a raving lunatic who attacks people at random. So, yeah, which team would I want to be on? Yeah, I'm joining the ops. We got Mina and Harley versus Chris and Sheeta. This match, actually, it was pretty good at the start, and then at some point it just kind of fell apart. It's weird. This weekend they announced... So, Collision... just finished, right? And so they had an hour of Collision tonight. But apparently they're having a live show on Saturday, and I think it's only 1 hour, which is weird. Like they're doing, it's like fair, like fighting at the fairgrounds. Fairway to hell. 1 hour, apparently. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Weird. I mean, they're probably taping some Ring of Honor stuff or something. But anyways, they went through a break. Mina was wrestling most of the time, and eventually, like I said, it fell apart. So Stat gave Mina a superplex, then a Falcon Arrow, got a two count, no reaction. Sheeta accidentally hit Statliner with a knee. Then she hit. Then she gets hit with a back fist by Mina. Harley tagged in. She's hitting forearms. Then she hit a neck breaker on Sheeta, rolled her up for two. Harley hit a roundhouse and a backstabber. Then she went for it's her finish, but Stat made the save. Then she got in Sheeta's face. Then Sheeta just picked Harley up, hit a Falcon Arrow, got the pin. She's celebrating. Stat's mad, and she leaves. And at one point, like, Sheeta, like, way to go, and she slaps her on the chest, and Stat's like, she walks. It was really weird. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on here.
Oh, they're eventually going to feud with each other.
Or Stat's going to turn heel. One of the two.
It's who cares?
Well, that's the bigger issue here.
That's my
problem. It's amazing how much of a tumble this women's division has taken in the last month, ever since Tony got hurt.
I mean,
and like I guess they dropped the who killed Tony storyline. That's dead, right?
No, they're just going to save the reveal or whatever. But like I said, if they sign Kaylee Ray, she's the second best person in this division tomorrow.
Yeah, and yet Tony or Dave won't shut up about Zoe Stark.
Zoe has potential, but I mean
Zoe's fine, but I mean
Kaylee and Kyrie are the two people that AEW could use most.
Kyrie. I think Kyrie's going to end up back in WWE.
I think she's going to end up back for this pay per view, and then she's gone.
Could be, yeah. Because I was surprised. I finally watched the Raw right after she got cut, where like the fans were like chanting, you know, cut for Kyrie, and they couldn't mute it. yeah, it's weird. Then we got they showed I wrote down Stoke, but it was actually Nana backstage, and then the camera finds Swerve, and he says, 2 months ago I told everyone I was after power. Very few understand what it truly means. Real power means deciding who eats and who starves, and no one will stop and make sure the whole world sees it, from the most dangerous to the most violent to the most wanted. And then he holds up the Bandito poster. More power means more fear, more control, and there's nothing more dangerous than a man who desires power, and I want it all. This was very mid. This
promo was ass. I'm sorry. It's Jeff Jarrett talking about stroke. That's what it is. And it's like, again, it's like, okay, what power do you get out of beating Bandito?
You get unless the ROH you're like title? Trying to take over ROH. Yeah, like, and they've never once mentioned ROH or his title, so I don't think it's that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one of those esoteric promos that sounds good in theory when you pitch it, and then you realize this makes no sense in a wrestling world.
And then the next segment is Renee with Brodito. And then Bandito says, Renee, you know, Swerve is right. I am the most wanted. If you want me, Swerve, I'm easy to find. And then Brody says, you know, Bandito, I know you got this to yourself. Swerve, it's one thing to mess with me, but if you mess with my friends, there'll be hell to pay. And again, this was like, we got 30 seconds to kill. Can you guys go do a promo?
You forgot the bark at the end.
Well, they did some weird thing where they were trying to get some catchphrase going. It wasn't just woof. It was a few things that they did. And I just didn't even bother writing it down because I don't think it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got the main event. And this was, another wild Darby title defense. Crowd heat was mixed. Like at times they were super hot, and at other times it was like there was nobody there. Shivani mentioned it's the first time anyone's ever defended the AEW world title in 3 consecutive weeks, and I guess it'll be 4 next week. They went through a break, they came back with 4 minutes left in the scheduled time, and then the match kind of went nuts. So Darby hit a dive onto Knight on the outside, hit the back of his head on the announce desk pretty hard. That was Knight that did that. Then he headbutted Knight into a chair. He was about to dive on him, and then Kevin Knight got up, tossed a chair away, jumps up to the top rope, hits Darby with a Rana to the outside. Darby takes a bump to the floor from the top turnbuckle, and the announcers don't barely even mention it. Mm-hmm. And then immediately they go to the next spot, which is Darby on the announce desk, and Kevin Knight does this freaking wild dive with I guess it was supposed to be a clothesline, but somehow like it was like a freaking car crash. They both somehow ended up under the desk. I don't even know how. And God, they look like they both died, but they both got back in the ring fairly quickly. Knight was selling his knee at this point, and I was wondering if he was really hurt, but I think it was just part of the story of the match. And then he did a dive from the second rope, but he missed. Darby put on the Scorpion Deathlock. Knight made the ropes, broke it up. Darby at this point is also selling his leg, goes to the top rope, and he going for a coffin drop, but Knight got his knees up, and then he starts selling them even more. Puts Darby on the top turnbuckle, but Darby powered out with punches, knocked him off. Went for a coffin drop again, but Kevin Knight knocked him off. And now at this point, he's in a tree of woe. Knight does a coast-to-coast drop kick. Then he hits the UFO splash, but again, he's selling his knee and he can't make the cover. And that's when I realized, okay, he's probably not hurt, because that was clearly part of the story of the match. And then he finally covered him, but Darby rolled out. And amazingly, the crowd didn't really even react. Then we got a light Darby chant. And then he rolled him over, went to the corner again, but Darby crawled away this time, so he's kind of getting desperate. And then Darby kicked him in the knee, put on a guillotine, and then Knight got up, And then he collapsed to the mat. And I thought, oh, man, he's going to collapse just like Juice Robinson did in the opener. But he won't go out. Then he finally gets up again. Darby wrenched his arm against the ropes. Then he put on a bulldog choke, left him draped against the ropes, hit a coffin drop. Knight falls into the middle of the ring. Darby hits another coffin drop and gets the win. And then Sting came out, congratulated Darby, and Dynamite was over. It was a pretty good match. Probably the weakest of the three, but still like really damn good. Like
The match was good. I think my personal predilection is I just want to take the guys in the back. I want to take these two especially because of their status as maybe not the guy, but the guy with the world title. And Kevin Knight especially on this end, and go, all right, you need to imagine, what if this is your only shot at a world championship in real life? How are you going to react out there? What kind of emotion are you bringing to this match? Because that's what it was missing for me, was emotion. The wrestling was fine. It was nice. The near falls were good. I want to see that sense of desperation out of a guy at the level of Kevin Knight trying to win a world title in the biggest match of his career. I want it to feel like the biggest match of his career. And I don't get that.
Didn't he just wrestle for the world title like a month ago?
Against MJF, yeah.
Yeah, so... But yeah,
it was kind of the same thing.
But
yeah, like, I just, it's one of those, well, yeah, okay. Look at it this way. MJF is a much quote unquote better wrestler in kayfabe, so to speak.
You know, Darby. A story of this match could have been, and the announcers could have told this, he lost a month ago. If he loses again tonight, he may not get another title match for years.
Or maybe Darby being injured isn't at the level of Max at full strength.
Right.
He could Darby's pull one vulnerable. Out.
Yeah.
Yes. I want that second tier of commitment in it. And I wasn't getting it. It was a fine match. It was a good super indie style type of match. It was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. And yeah, I agree with all that. And I did. You know, it just occurred to me. It's possible Okada could win the title next week.
Yes.
Because at some point the story is going to be that Darby's body gave out. And if Okada won the title,
then they could catch the matches for the world title.
No, that to catch the match is for the national title, not the world title. To catch the wins.
Okay.
So Okada is still the world champion, and the match we're building to at all of a sudden is now Okada versus Ospreay. Which is a freaking massive match.
All right, I'll take that. Yeah. I don't think anybody has that
on their bingo card, but
no. But I don't think they're also not going to do that in the middle of their quote unquote playoff programming.
That, you know what, that may be a very good point, because these ratings, we haven't really talked about it, but they're getting worse every week. Now, part of it, I think Nielsen's done another change in the way they're figuring out the ratings. But, you know, between the ratings and the ticket sales and, you know, the early returns on the Darby title reign are, you know, they're not positive. I'm not necessarily saying they're negative, because there's, you know, there's the playoffs. There may be the methodology is changing and everything. But I don't think there's anything to suggest that it's a business positive.
But Paul, we don't have the numbers for the streaming on HBO Max.
No, we don't. But you know what else is also streaming on HBO Max?
God, I'm sorry, but I sat through ratings talk and listened to Dave talk about how like 50% of the viewers are on HBO Max. It's just there was a fraction battle between Chica. It's like it's slightly less than it was like two-thirds versus slightly less than two-thirds versus one-half. And I had to write on the board, yes, 3/6 is slightly less than 4/6. Chico's right. Yeah,
I don't really buy that, but I could be. You know.
I don't think there are 200,000 people watching on HBO Max every week. I'm sorry, I can't get there.
Well, the problem isn't the NHL playoffs also airing on HBO Max?
Yes, okay. Live.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, well, we don't know. And it doesn't matter what we think. What matters is what's happening. And they have the numbers, I think. So if they get renewed.
We know the STIP. So, I mean, we talked about before.
Oh, what is this? Oh, yeah. It was so the STIP, if anyone watched us and didn't watch Collision, MJF's putting up his hair. yay. I was hoping for something more interesting than that. I guess that leaves, you know what? The one positive I'll say about that stip is it's so lame that you could see either way happening.
Well, MJF, we know what they do when you MJF can shave his head. It'll be like every other AEW shaved head. You never get to see it, like Wheeler.
Or he could win the title. Like, he easily could win the title. Like,
he could very easily win the title, and I think he's going to win the title.
Yeah, because they're in New York, and and the storyline would be Darby's finally gave out, and you know what? They could even play in this whole Callis family MJF thing. MJF could pay off Okada to hurt Darby, you know, going into their match. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's probably what's going to happen is we're going to get another payoff, and then, you know, maybe Andrade's going to be watching. He's not going to be happy about it. Who knows? So that was Dynamite. And again, Collision aired immediately after. It's on the PVR. I'll watch it at some point. I still haven't watched last week's Collision, so I'm trying to watch everything in order, but then I got to watch this show so I can cover it on this show. If it wasn't for the podcast, I would be, you know, I probably wouldn't even watch last week's Dynamite yet. That's how far behind I am. So, but I'm getting there. I just watched the Raw from last week, the one that ended with the Roman and Jacob Fatu promo, where Jacob choked him.
Yes, the Tongan death grip is back.
Yeah. I loved it. I like some stuff on Dynamite too, but I will say I was a lot more fired up for the Dynamites that were happening the first 2 months of the year leading into Revolution than I have been the last couple months ever since MJF lost the belt, really. So
I feel like they're just booking matches and they're just kind of trying to get that path that Tony has in his notebook. And
we're trying to get through the NBA and NHL playoffs, start the Owen, and then I think
get to All In, and then it'll feel big.
And then All In, All Out, and then the Cruiserweight class or the Continental Classic, you know, and then, you know, then Tony's cooking. And then everyone will look back at this, and it always all set up. You know,
But I feel like his creative team is not doing him. They're not doing a lot of heavy lifting for him.
And actually, if you listen to him, he will tell you that he is the creative team. So
I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there may be something to that. I'm sure he has a card for All In his head, or maybe written down.
I think it's written down, and he has a path. Well, he has a kind of a loose outline of how he wants to get there, but the week to week stuff is a little bit beyond him.
And then in the meantime, he's got certain people that are probably in charge of their own storylines. Mm-hmm. Jericho, Moxley.
Yes.
Cope and Cage for sure. And the Bucks as part of that as well. So, you know, and so you got all these different people working, you know, in maybe even Swerve in different directions to try to get to the same goal, which is All In. And you know, selling as many tickets as they can to Wembley. And ticket sales for that show, I mean, I think the last time I saw was at 23,000. So I think it's going to be hard for them to get to 40. But and 40 would, a lot of people would be disappointed with 40. I think 40 is fine. There's nothing wrong with 40,000. But in a 90,000 seat stadium, I don't know, some people will be upset about that. But I think you sell 40,000 tickets, I don't think there's anything anybody can complain about. All right, Jeff, let's get your plugs in.
Shake Them Ropes to be recorded hopefully tomorrow. I haven't talked to Rob yet, but yes, we will be previewing Backlash, which will be happening on Saturday. A somewhat interesting card, I think. I don't know.
It's no Collision, but okay.
It's no Collision. Well, you know.
Wrestling on Collision than there will be on Backlash.
I'm sure there will be some New Day to AEW talk, possibly, because of those cuts hadn't happened yet, or knowledge of those hadn't happened yet. And then, I don't know, maybe Rob will want to talk Ted Turner. We'll see what happens. But that should be in your podcatchers either late Thursday or early Friday.
Sounds like a fun show. And then Jeff or Garrett and I will be back next week on Tuesday. We'll talk about whoever gets cut from WWE this week, whoever's left. We'll probably run down Backlash if anything major happened on that show. And then Jeff and I will be back next week to talk about Dynamite as we head towards Double or Nothing. And the card's starting to shape up. I think we got about 6 matches now. So we're getting there. So for Jeff Hawkins, I've been Paul Fontaine, and this has been The Dynamite Show.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.